Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. Jacob's here.
Hey guys, did you miss us?
I think they did. We got
it's been
messages.
2 months.
We got some messages.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. We're back though.
Mm-hmm.
We're back.
We're here in your ear.
A Dinosaur's Story.
Oh no.
Have you ever seen that film?
Yes.
All the way through?
Yeah. I was born in 1990. I saw the film on television like 1,000 times.
What was it, Dr. New Eyes and Dr.
New Eyes and Dr. Screw Eyes, which is such a weird... Really... It's a really strange movie. If you haven't seen it, yeah, we're back. The podcast has just immediately gone off the rails because now we're talking about a weird, bad dinosaur movie from the 90s.
Well, just pointing this out, though, also executive produced by Steven Spielberg, who in an interview was like, yeah, well, you know, I made Jurassic Park, but then I also kind of wanted to, you know, make something for really young kids, so... Here's this.
So I made this weird nightmare.
This
fever dream.
Secured a green light for this fucking weird acid trip. Like,
yeah. Completely filled with like untold animators' fetishes that we don't even have names for yet.
Yeah, right.
To this day.
Yeah, really. What's the last big thing I did? Otakon 2018 has come and gone.
Mm-hmm.
I like Otakon a lot. This year was no different. Seemed a little quiet to me, but their attendance was up like 5,000 or something. Good year. Had some good guests. Got a bunch of interviews that are mostly up on the site now. I had a really fun time interviewing Nobutoshi Kana, who is the voice of Basara Neki from Macross 7 and the 90s Guts, like Guts from the 90s Berserk.
Mm-hmm.
He has like, and Toski from like, Fushigi Yugi.
Mm-hmm.
And like that kind of like fired up. Like,
he's still working now. Like, a recent thing he's done?
He's Lancer in Fate.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah, that's just an eternal paycheck.
Yeah, he's just going to be Lancer forever.
Just Lancer forever.
Fun interview. I think that'll be up on the site early next week. We had so many interviews. We had like over 20, like 25 interviews or something like that from Anime Expo. And we're still publishing them. You may notice the site's had one every single day for the last, like, 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks or something like that.
Yeah, all of my AX interviews are, like, just now going up.
They're just – yours are just now going up. We got through mine. We got through the other freelancers. We got through some Otakon stuff. And now your AX stuff is starting to go up. That'll be, like, the end of this week and next week.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so it's a lot of stuff. And a lot of them turned out pretty good. So check them out. You know, obviously I'm biased. But, yeah, check them out. But yeah, so Otakon was all right. I got to see a bunch of Washington, D.C., as usual. There was scheduled to be a rally for Nazis that weekend that turned out to be nothing.
Yeah.
Like, 30 people showed up, and then, thousands of counter-protesters,
because they're like, uh-uh.
Yeah. Yeah, which is
like this
really,
happened last year, and no.
Yeah, which is heartening, because yes. I was, a lot of people were really beside themselves over that. Like, I personally know at least half a dozen people who didn't go to Otakon because of that.
Right.
So I felt really bad for them because I know last year they suffered that attendance hit from the move. And it's like, oh, man, these people can't catch a break. They moved their convention. They suffer a big attendance loss. And then now they got Nazi Party Weekend happening the same time. Like, it's just – it was brutal. So I was really glad to see that their attendance is up.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to see what the theme is for next year. I feel like Otakon is in a position to get some really unique guests, and they often do, so I'm always excited to see what they got going on. I do think they could use that convention space a little bit better. I don't really like the layout, like the way they have it laid out. But what did I do in Washington, D.C.? I got to go to the African American History and Culture Museum, which was mind-blowingly incredible. I loved it. Like, loved it. Just an amazing place, and I spent like four and a half hours there and didn't see the whole thing. Like, it's huge.
Oh, wow.
There's so much stuff to see in there. It was just really it was an experience. I really enjoyed it. If you're there and you have a chance to see it, go see it. Tickets sell out really fast, but if you get up early enough in the morning, you can usually get same day passes. So just get same day passes, go see it. It is definitely worth your time. Take a look. Give yourself a lot of time to see the whole thing too. Like it's very impressive. But other than that, my other thing with Otakon is it's really short.
Mm-hmm.
Otakon starts at like noon on Friday and it's over 3 p.m. Sunday, and that's like 2.5 days, right? For like a show that's usually touted as like this big major thing, it feels like it's over, and you're packed with stuff to do that whole time, so it goes by fast anyway. But I feel like that's really short for an anime con. I kind of feel like it's short for almost any convention. Like, I feel like you need 3 whole days and then a day that's only like half a day.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, no, that makes sense.
Like,
the demands for these things have gone up.
Yeah, I feel like, well, yeah, yeah. And, you know, if you spent your money on a trip to D.C. for that weekend, you spent a lot of money for what effectively amounts to, like, barely a 48-hour experience. You know, Friday at noon to Sunday at noon, you're done, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It just seems really short to me. Maybe I'm used to the, like, week-long AX schedule and San Diego, which is also 5 days. But those are the biggest conventions in the country.
Right. Those so are maybe my expectations. Your expectations are maybe a little lofty, but I understand what you mean about Otakon being, I feel like it's talked up as like the biggest thing on the East Coast, but it's not really like it is. It's more mid-size.
We'll see what happens with New York.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what happens. Now they're back up there, but the thing is that when you look at the numbers for conventions,
mm-hmm.
there's Anime Expo, and then there's literally everything else.
Right.
The gulf between AX and the next biggest con mm-hmm. is like 80,000 people or something like that. It's mm-hmm. huge. The next biggest convention is 30-something.
Yeah.
There's no contest. Mm. So comparing anything to AX feels like a huge waste of time at this point. Mm-hmm. So I kind of look at Otakon a little differently now as a result of that, I think. But I do feel like Thursday night programming leading into a full Friday where like the exhibit hall opens at 10 a.m. or something like that, a full Saturday, and then Sunday, you know, until 3 or 4 in the afternoon. I feel like that's even that would be a little bit more full, but they don't do anything Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like expand a little, mm-hmm. but maybe they got to wait till they actually grow in attendance, like past where they ever were in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
Once they get there, I feel like maybe. They'll right. be in a position. Anyway, so that was Otakon. We will be at Crunchyroll Expo September 1st through the 3rd. Now, there's a weird convention. It starts on a Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday, Sunday, Monday, because it's Labor Day weekend. So we fly to San Jose that Friday.
Mm-hmm. Do you know the way to San Jose?
I do, actually.
Sorry, it was obligatory. It just jumped out.
But we will be there at Crunchyroll Expo. I am on some panel that I don't know. Can't remember right now. I'll put it on my Twitter at some point. But
I will be on a panel talking about discussing editorial management, basically what an editor does, with Kayla of Crunchyroll's editorial as well. So,
oh, all right,
look forward to that.
Cool.
I don't know the name of it either, but at the time, but I will look it up and have
you'll
that
see
information
it on
for
Twitter.
You soon.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hey, man, let's talk about anime. We took a 2-month break and then didn't talk about the ending
we didn't.
Of Darling in the Franxx.
Yeah.
And, that happened I don't remember. So, okay, I have a confession. I did watch the last episode of Darling in the Franxx, but it was like 2 months ago, and I don't remember what happened in it, and I didn't want to watch it again.
The show's dumb shit peaked. It peaked, and the ending was just like,
I remember,
it didn't get worse. It just got stupider.
I remember the fat kid turns into Paul Blart Mall Cop, and I remember that.
You're going to have to clarify
that's
that
what one. I remember. The fat kid turns into, well, he gets a mustache.
Oh,
and
you're
then he
right.
Looks
he
like,
grows, yeah, he looks exactly like Kevin James.
Yeah, he looks like Paul Blart Mall Cop. So that's, I remember that, and I remember, what else happened? Let's try to remember what happened in the last episode of Darling in the Franxx. Because after the alien twist,
mm-hmm.
It's just like, who gives a shit?
Exactly. It's like, everything is out the window now because you did aliens, and we already talked about why that doesn't work.
And the thing is, like, I've had people come up to me and ask me, like, hey, I started watching Darling in the Franxx, it seems kind of interesting. I kind of want to keep watching it, but like I've detected this kind of regressive stuff in it. And don't just stop. Just don't watch it. And
everything in the first half doesn't matter.
Well, that's what I said. And ultimately, I found myself. That's what mattered. It wasn't that it was socially regressive. What mattered was that stupid alien twist that just completely dropped the ball. Mm-hmm. If it was bullshit conservative nonsense, but it like stuck with it, I might say like. Do you like getting mad?
Because this is an interesting...
Because it is like, interesting. You know. It is political. Like, you can watch it and pull out what they're trying to say with it, but it's just a waste of your time.
Like, even Crossange, I'm going to invoke Crossange. You know, that show sticks to its worldview from the start to the finish. The dumb twists pile on, but nothing that happens negates what happened before. It doesn't. They introduce... alternate dimensions where people who evolved from dragons that just look like people weird shit happens in Crossange, but all of it doesn't, none of it negates where the story started. There aren't many mech shows that employ plot twists that terrible. Darling in the Franxx really like that is about as bad as you can get, is like a twist that makes the first two thirds of your story mean nothing. That's a really, really bad choice. Yeah, so it's hard really to remember strange. How it ends, because who gives a shit, right?
It's hard to remember how it ends because it's impossible to care after the it is impossible to care after the alien twist. And it would be like if you're watching like one of those like Christian movies where they're, but then at the end they just start explaining that Jesus is actually a robot or something, and like none of this means anything. Like it's all in this weird bubble, you know, like this weird lore bubble that can't, like, even if you're paying basic attention to where the plot goes, you can't say that this applies to anything.
Right.
You know? So yeah, it's just, what's the point? There's no point. And so that is ultimately the takeaway from Darling in the Franxx. What a waste of time. Which makes me, now that I sit here thinking about talking about it, it makes me kind of like angry for a different reason and yet all over again.
I guess. I mean, I know where I know that everybody was talking. I'm glad I engaged with it at the time, because now nobody's ever going to, like, who's going to engage with this thing ever again, really. I mean, some people will, I'm sure. But I'm saying, like, if you were going to get mad and talk about it and have fun sort of, like, jab in the hornet's nest, I guess, it was going to be at that time, because now it's, who cares? You know,
yeah,
because
it's
so
really
thoroughly
hard.
Buried itself. It got in the ground and buried itself.
Yeah. I did see a lot of O2 cosplay at conventions this summer, like a lot of it. And I even saw a Klaxosaur Queen cosplayer at Anime Expo. She had like these big inflatable, like, okay. You've seen people cosplay as, like, the Nine-Tailed Fox from Naruto.
Yeah.
So just that, but repainted.
That, but tentacles.
Repainted to be black and green instead of orange and yellow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was that. It was still really, like, really? Okay.
Well, you know, like, again, like, people were hungry for it, and even if it wasn't very good, people were hungry for a show in this genre and in this dark art design style, and, you know, sometimes that's all it takes. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that liked it sincerely, but not... very many.
Well, but I
a lot
I
of people turned
think...
on it. It's funny if you look at our rankings where the upsy downsy, you know, episode ratings for Darling in the Franxx, and it is definitely like there are pit moments, but it is like, oh, this is divisive for stuff that happens after the midpoint. It's not like, oh, this tanked. It's like, well, this is divisive. You know, whatever. It's giving a conversation up. This sort of thing happens. It's very normal. And then it jumps into like, oh, this is the pits after the aliens. Like it is, oh, the tide has unfortunately turned on this a bit, you know.
Yeah, a bunch of those guys, a bunch of the creative staff are going to be at Crunchyroll Expo, and I'm very curious to hear what kind of questions they get. And like, I'm really curious to talk to those guys and like, you know, get some answers, I guess. And I don't mean that, like, I realize saying that like that makes you sound like an asshole. I'm gonna get some answers. That's
no,
not
no,
what
you,
I mean.
You mean you just want to know what their creative
really
process
curious.
Was.
Yeah, like,
did they start with the aliens? When did, you know, you just sort of try to understand where they were coming from.
Yeah. Because, like, but here's the thing, though. Because like, I was thinking about Darling in the Franxx a little bit, and it's like, that show managed to get everybody talking, and... I feel like maybe it's rare where a big, glossy, kind of, real, like, made by hyper-competent artists that gets a lot of marketing, where they took risks with the story and they tried doing something really super unique and, like, political even, we don't get that very often. So, like, even this being the way it was, like, I wish we had more shows like it.
I'm grateful for the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. And it would also be good if, like, every now and then it was good.
Yeah.
And we weren't just expressing frustration.
I'm counting on my finger. Okay, 4 months. I have that right? Yeah. 4 months till Ikuhara's next show. Sarah's on my...
Is that January?
Give it to me. Yeah, give it to me. Put it in my veins.
What if that's a huge disappointment?
It'll be interesting.
What if it's not?
You were talking about...
What if it's boring, Jacob? Had you considered that?
I will... May lightning strike me dead if it's boring. Like, I don't know about good, although, like, it's 3 for 3 so far with me, personally, so... but I don't think boring is in this man's vocabulary. I think he would have gotten a lot more work in the 2000s if he was willing to be boring, I think.
I feel like I really have to go back and watch... I have to try to watch Penguin Drum again, and then I need to try to watch the other one, the lesbian bear one.
Yurikuma Arashi.
Yurikuma.
Penguin Drum is challenging. Yurikuma is if you've watched his stuff before, it's honestly really easy. It's not complicated. It's really
not that
simple.
It's too complicated. It's that I don't really like the way he layers his stories. I get bored.
Oh,
like,
wow, really?
So much shit packed in.
That's what I'm telling you, is it's not a ton of shit. Yurikuma Arashi is the most basic thing he's ever made.
All right. I saw the first couple.
If you want, like, a walk in the park...
I saw the first few episodes and was like, yeah.
Yeah, totally. And that's fine. I'm not saying you would like it more than his other work. I'm saying it's the most focused. It's the most, hey, this is about one thing, and it just stays on the point, and it gets its message across very easily without going, and here's another thing, and here's another idea, like Penguin Drum and Utenodu. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think his new show, maybe I'll just watch that as try to keep up with it.
It's about sexy otters.
Great.
not the kind you're thinking.
Do they scream like otters scream?
Oh, yeah. So we went to the zoo one time. We have this video of, like, a screaming screaming river otter. And
is a couple of
it's
them,
pretty good. They we found out it was because it was feeding time.
Oh yeah.
And they were just like yelling.
It's
pretty good.
Cat screams.
You know what's really funny is that he's made a show about gay bears, right? But it's not those kind of gay bears. And now he's going to make a show about gay otters, and it's like, well, not those kind of gay otters. It's just the coincidence just makes me extremely happy.
Do you remember that scene in, I think it's Return of the King, where Gollum, like, screams at Sam and then, like, jumps on him?
Mm-hmm.
That one shot where he's, like, screaming, like, ah!
Yeah.
That's how I, like, our cat and those otters. That's yeah. how I, like, envision them when they're doing.
Yeah, I'm like, how you doing, Philly? Like, she gets fed at 5. It's 4:30. Yeah. How you doing, Philly?
Yeah, the Gollum face.
It's like, all right. She's very greedy.
What were we talking about?
We were talking about Darling in the Franks.
Oh, Ikuhara.
We weren't talking about Darling in the Franks.
I was belaying my shameful blaseness towards post Utena Ikuhara works.
That's not shameful. It's, you know, he's divisive. He's a divisive creator, and that's fine.
Yeah, but, like, at the same time, like, he's kind of the Takahata to, like. If Anno is Miyazaki,
mm-hmm.
Ikuhara is his Takahata.
Yes.
It's, like, definitely.
He's literally he's literally a character in Evangelion.
Yeah.
And it's also funny because, hey, Darling in the Franks copied Yurikuma Arashi in its midpoint episode. So
it copied Ikuhara a lot.
I don't know that it did a lot. So it copies Anno a lot, and then that episode and a couple ones right after it, it copies beats from Ikuhara, which is really interesting to me. Because, like,
visually, it was kind of biting them both.
It is, yeah. But, you know, they're the granddaddies of that generation of otaku stuff. So.
Hey, you know what? When we're done with this conversation right now, it'll be the last time we talk about Darling in the Franks until the end of the year.
Let's play a commemorative 0.75x slowed down version of the opening theme.
Until the year.
Like artifacting and chunk, chunk, chunk.
Until the end of the year when it will doubtlessly come up in our best and worst of 2018 lists.
We'll
see
you
in a few months, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it'll inevitably for you it'll come up, yeah.
Maybe. Maybe.
I might watch enough garbage that it doesn't. We'll see.
Yeah, right. You might watch enough trash to.
I love trash.
Okay, so what did I watch otherwise? What did you watch otherwise?
I've been watching a bunch of stuff. So do we want to start positive or negative? Because my brain is of two minds.
Let's start positive.
Okay, let's start positive. So I've been watching Planet With.
Okay, this is the show that I've seen three episodes of it.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter seems... my Twitter bubble specifically seems excited about it. It is not doing well.
Well, it doesn't really surprise me.
The reviews get kind of middling to low traffic, and from what I understand, the sales are bad.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I haven't looked at the sales data for it, but that wouldn't surprise me. It's a weird...
That's a judgment call. That's the characterization mm-hmm. that I have in my head.
Well, look, so it's a weird anime by JC staff who don't really have, a Gainax pedigree or whatever, where they go, here's Trigger staff, or here's people who worked on Macross or whatever. It's a weird original mecha series, and that doesn't always go well. In fact, it doesn't often go well. And they don't even have Yoji Enokido, who can kind of get stuff going still, even though Yoji Enokido hasn't made anything good in a long time, but he can still... Captain Earth still sold stuff, I believe.
Captain Earth.
Man, Captain Earth was bad.
I didn't watch the whole thing because it was bad.
Yeah, because it was bad. Enokido is going off the rails. I hope he writes something good again soon, but we'll see. And anyway, my point is the thing that makes this special is that it is the rare anime where every single episode is storyboarded by one guy, the writer, not the director. Because the writer is a mangaka who has never worked in anime before, and he's just written and storyboarded this whole thing, and he was working on it for years, apparently, and then got it greenlit to be made into a series. And it was like, oh, that's neat. Like, that's a real passion project by, a person who's really enthusiastic about it. Like, that's really cool. His name's Satoshi Mizukami, and he's a well-known mangaka that I have never read a thing that he's written, but I'm curious to... read his work now. He's written Spirit Circle and Lucifer and the Biscuit Hammer and some other stuff that I'm just wholly unfamiliar with. But I really, really like his take on mecha. It's like simple and straightforward, and it's, like Darling in the Franxx, it's a philosomech type thing, which means that the robots aren't really robots, they're metaphors for things, and it's sort of a big emotional metaphor. But he has a sense of humor about it. The show doesn't take itself very seriously, at all. And it's just kind of a pastiche of mecha tropes, the coming together and just kind of talking about how Mizukami feels about empathy and about basically following your dreams versus listening to other people and making room for their dreams and stuff like that. But it's all just kind of lighthearted, and it says what it means, and it's not like asking you to decipher its messages. It's just kind of sitting you down and talking with you about emotional things in between these really kick-ass action sequences with good CG, really well done CG and crazy great monster mech designs, and it has a really good sense of humor about itself, and I dig it. So I'm I would be really eager to read more work by this guy, and it doesn't surprise me that it's not selling. It also doesn't have there's no fan service. It has sort of a childish it feels like it's aimed it airs as a late night otaku thing, but it feels like it's aimed at a younger audience, because most of the characters are middle schoolers, and there's not weird fan service or anything in it. I don't know. It's good. It's written like a really good Super Sentai show. I remember when Gen Urobuchi wrote a Kamen Rider thing, and Kamen Rider Gaim, I think it was. And it was this isn't as good as a Gen Urobuchi thing for adults or for older audience, but it is good. And that was kind of my reaction to Planet With, where it's this is a really thoughtful, nice thing about considering other people's perspectives and not rushing into something that you're really convicted about without considering other sides of stuff. And it's this nice chicken soup sort of action show. So, I've really been digging it. It doesn't surprise me that's not successful, though.
Well, it might... Who knows? That's just the character. You were characterizing it that way as well. This show doesn't seem like it's successful.
Yeah, I haven't looked up the Japanese sales figures, but I know the response that I'm seeing. And it's Anna Twitter, Yurikuma Arashi was not successful, but the people that I follow are really into it. and I'm really into it. And that's kind of how it is with Planet With, where, like, a lot of the Anna Twitter people that I follow and, like, my bubble is like, man, I really like this. This is nice. And, you know, maybe the rest of the world doesn't care, but that's fine. So
it's a cool show. I watched three episodes of it. I agree with you on the CG. I do like the fact that it's a philosophy mecha show that just kind of states what it's trying to say, and it's not being too hoity-toity about it. I don't like the designs. I think it looks like a show no one bought that Jenny On would put out on four episodes a disc in, like, 2002. And I've never really liked that. I like, literally, the character designs and the mecha designs and everything really look like clearance bin stuff from the mid-2000s. That's the way it looks to me. And other, you know, people might love that aesthetic style. Totally, I get it. But all I can think is, like, Steam Detectives.
I think for me, so I like the mecha designs. The character designs, I think, are pretty generic. But the thing that makes me think mid-2000s like you is the color depth.
The depth
of frame. Yeah, there's a maid, right?
So, it's a maid and a wacky animal character, and they're sitting around the table, and it's nighttime outside, and it's a Jenny On DVD.
It's ninja nonsense.
Yeah.
And but that's not the way the rest of the show is. So, but I do like the mech designs. I think that they look really cool, but that's just kind of, I have a bias towards stuff that's, like, more bio-informed or zoologically informed, and these are all... more like this, like, biomech thing in the shape of an animal that I think is cool. Like, you know, the main mech is a cat. That's great. And so I have no problem with that. But you're right, the character designs are a little super flat. They're a little kid showy from the 2000s. So I can see how that wouldn't be appealing to certain audiences.
Yeah, but the writing is really strong.
Yeah, so. the writing is just no bones about. Like, this guy just knows. He knows how to pace a thing and just not waste any of your time. He's like, get in, get out, say this, like, and immediate, and, but with that, so it feels like it would be rushed if it didn't have emotional impact, but it does. Like, the things that are supposed to be emotional, so you saw the first episode, that scene with the, like, Sentai hero who doesn't turn out to be the hero at all. He's like, not important, but, like, has this thing where he has to, like, forgive himself for not being able to save his mother when he was a child. And do you remember that scene? And it was, like, emotional, and it worked, and it was sad, and it was like, oh, that was really well paced and executed, and I felt the thing, even though you just rushed through it, and then, like, that guy's not really important until much later. But it was like, oh, that's nice. Like, so it's like he moves really, really quickly, but he gets the emotional point that he wants to make out, and he does it very well.
Which is really hard to do.
Really, like,
that's
difficult.
That's a combined effort of everyone working on that show that's executing on that stuff, because it could feel like they're just rushing through it, but it doesn't. It's a cool show. Maybe the ending will be, like, even better than, like, maybe the ending will be so, 'cause sometimes it happens, like, the ending's really good and people talk about it for a long time and more people watch it, so.
I can say that it got to, basically, it went through what feels like would, in a lesser show, be 24 episodes of story in 6 episodes.
That's the thing that I've been hearing, like, I think Nick Kremer said something to that effect. It's like, but it just cuts out, this is 12 episodes, it's a 26 episode mecha show, but it cuts out 12 episodes of what the, you know.
Yeah.
What is that?
Like, yeah, and because a large part of it works on assuming that you know all these tropes already.
Yeah.
And so they beat the villain, the ostensible villain, the, like, King Dragon bad guy, in episode 6, and it's like, now what? So the second half of the show is, I assume, apparently a thing that Mizukami does, I don't know because I haven't read his work, is he will do that, is he'll, like, run through the beats of a genre that he's playing with, and then he'll say, okay, but what happens afterward, and then turns everything around to basically subvert the obligatory arc that he went through. So I'm curious to see what he does with this. So Planet With, I like it. I like it. Another.
Cool. You might say it's a deconstruction.
A discourse.
I'm sorry.
That's a discourse that's going on.
I wasn't serious.
Yeah.
I wasn't being serious.
The word deconstruction.
Shouldn't use that. It's been it's a dirty word now. You can't.
Yeah, it's not it we have more specific and useful terms for the emotion that people were expressing when they used the word deconstruction in the early 2010s for a lot of stuff. So.
All right. So Planet With, anything else this season?
I mean, I have some negative thoughts.
Oh, wait a minute. Hang on. You?
I know. It's shocking.
Jacob Chapman?
It's shocking.
Has negative opinions about anime.
Mm-hmm.
No. All right. What's rubbing you the wrong way?
All right. So, two shows. Both air on Wednesday. Both are continuations of beloved things, and they're both quite bad. And so I've been keeping track of both of them.
And Boruto.
No, I'm not watching Boruto, but that might be another one, actually. So I, as far as I understand, I think people seem pretty blasé on Boruto. I almost said blasé on Boruto.
Blasé on Boruto.
Blasé on Boruto. But I was talking about Steins Gate Zero and Free Dive to the Future, which is diving to something else right now, TBH.
What a burn.
Yeah. No, I was thinking of that because I saw the rankings. We have our rankings, and it is diving. Yeah,
you're right.
And anyway, but I think
dive to the clearance bin.
Yeah. In the former case with Steins Gate, as time has gone on, I've soured more and more on Steins Gate. I think I was always a little conflicted about it, but I was like, well, there's some really good stuff in here. Mostly structurally.
It's so boring. God, Steins Gate is boring.
But now I'm like, wow, this is... now I feel like Steins Gate, like I did or do about Haruhi Suzumiya, where it's like, but really, honestly, like, we don't... This is aged so poorly that even the stuff where I'm like, well, for the time, but for the most part, it's just... I just toss it out.
In my brain, it's like Haruhi Suzumiya still lights up the fun times.
Oh, yeah?
Steins Gate lights up the... depressing, trapped in a prison watching episodes of Steins Gate.
Yeah. In both cases, I'm down...
Filter is the ugly, like,
it's
gray,
pretty
green...
Gray.
Fucking Aliased digipaint garbage.
I have affection for the music from both of those, but that's it. Everything else, I'm like, wow, this really, who cares? This really didn't age well at all. Like, fuck, who cares? And Steins Gate Zero, like, it appears to have thrown out that goodwill because everybody was like, okay, so it set a precedent, right? They're like, okay, the first half of Steins Gate is going to be set up and it's going to be kind of boring, and then the second half is going to, like, whoa, change everything, right? So they went into Zero, I think, unfortunately, expecting that. And then it didn't do that at all. The first half was boring, and then, like, getting into the second half, it was like an episode about Daru being set up with his future wife on a date, and he just can't be himself. Like, a stupid sitcom episode. And this was after we know that there's really high stakes and bad things are going to happen, and they fall into that, and it was like, whoa, okay. This is not what you want
to
be doing.
So there has to be more.
Yeah, it was like, this is not what you want to be doing around episode 14, 15. This is not what you want to be doing.
I've heard nothing but complaining about Steins Gate.
Yeah, and so the budget went to shit. Like, it is not animated at all. If you thought the first show was ugly, at least the animation quality was consistent, even if you don't like the art direction so much. The animation quality in Steins Gate Zero is balls. It's real bad. And, you know, so that's not... So that's kind of a disappointment. And then Free is much less of a disappointment, but I personally feel like this one may be divisive. So the weird thing with Free is that this season is based around the prequel movie, Starting Days, that has not been released over here yet. Right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, they showed it at Anime Expo, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it.
Yeah. So I've seen it. Most people haven't, but it's not... It didn't aid my affection for season 3. So like, a lot of people are like, well, if you haven't seen Starting Days, you're not going to care about these characters because they're suddenly bringing them back and, like, you know, they weren't in the first two seasons, so people don't care. And it's like, well, I mean, like, so I get what you're saying, but I have seen that movie, and A, I didn't really like it, and B, like, no, like, it's just not a good idea, I don't think. These characters are going to college for the first time. We sat with them through high school. The first two seasons are really good, and they end, like, on a high note. And it's really weird because this season we have a different show directed by the lady who directed the first two seasons of Free. I can't remember her name off the top of my head. I'm so sorry, mea culpa. I don't have the wiki in front of me. But she's directing Banana Fish right now, which is really well directed and really compelling. Like, say what you will about whether you like the story of the characters to what extent. Like, it's really well directed and paced and boom, boom, boom. It's really compelling, like the first two seasons of Free was. And Free season 3 is, like, just flatline. It is, nobody seems to ever have any fun. They don't rip their shirts off or do fun man service stuff or anything like that. There's very little in the way of jokes, and the jokes are really bland. And the whole plot is these guys are in college, they're in university, in different places. So some in Tokyo, some in Australia, I think, again, and then there's something going on in the United States at one point, and then, of course, the seniors back at Iwatobi, and they've expanded the cast so that's really bloated, and it takes place across three continents, and nobody will shut up about a thing that happened in middle school in this prequel movie. The whole show is everybody, even people who weren't there for it. We see Rey and Nagisa... Like, not Rey and Nagisa haven't been talking about their new recruits. What I thought was going to be interesting is seeing them in a leadership position with, like, new cute freshmen Iwatobi, where they have to, you know, take up Makoto's role and sort of, like, mentor them. And I thought that would be really fun. But we just barely check in with them, and they're like, oh, I wonder if Haru's okay because he's thinking about the sad thing that happened in middle school. What? Like, and so the whole thing is just this dirge. It's really unfun. The animation is about as good as it was to be, like, in the previous seasons. It still looks really nice. It looks nicer than basically everything else airing this season because it's a KyoAni show. But, man, it is dull, dull, dull. And who cares about a thing that happened in middle school that I thought was resolved in the prequel movie, but I guess not. Like... It is really boring, and well, what a shame. What a shame, right? But honestly, the second season ended so strong for Free that I don't think we needed anything after that. Like, making more was a mistake. I think it was done for commercial reasons, and the director's not involved anymore. She is clearly the spark that made that thing special, and now she's working on Banana Fish, so watch Banana Fish instead, you know.
Yeesh. Well, that's kind of sucks.
Yeah, well...
But it's popular, so we have to keep making more of it.
Yeah, it's not real popular with Western fans right now. Like, its star has fallen a bit, I think.
Yeah, well, look, if you wrote the end of the story, and then you're like, eh, well, gotta make more money. Just keep making it, and you're out of story ideas, and you don't have anything good.
Somehow out of ideas, even though you sent these characters to college, which that opens up a whole bunch of new ideas. And Rey and Nagisa... are in a leadership position at Iwatobi, that opens up a whole... I have new ideas for this, and I'm not making this thing. Like,
what is preventing them from just doing an entire animated series that's like an Elseworlds tale that's just that ending theme where they're all in the desert? Make a fantasy adventure series starring the boys. Like,
that was part of the little movie that they released.
A little preview thing. Yeah, make that in, like, do a whole alternate reality thing where there's like a RPG party and
yeah, that was the best. That was the best part of the movie that they what was it called? Free something. I forgot the name of it, but it's not the prequel movie. It's the one they released to announce season 3.
Take your marks,
and that's 1/4 of it. It's just four OVAs, but that's one of the best parts. Is they show you them making a movie in the desert with those costumes and stuff like that to try and recruit people. And it was funny. And they rent a camel and it's great. They decided no fun allowed in Dive to the Future. So.
Or just come up with something. Yeah.
No fun allowed.
What a shame. Okay. So yeah, I'm only watching Planet with, I've seen a few Asobi Asobase.
Mm-hmm.
Asobase. Asobase.
It's funny. I think it's really funny.
It's funny. Yeah, I like it.
Did you get to the guy who shoots lasers out of his asshole?
No.
That's the best part.
I wish you hadn't told me that.
I won't explain it. The explanation is the good part.
Okay, all right. Okay.
It begins with that. That's the first shot of the episode.
I've only seen a few.
Okay.
I keep thinking about watching Review Starlight, but I haven't yet. The fury seems to have died down. People were really excited about it, and now it doesn't seem like they're as excited about it, but I don't know. It's the middle of the season. It's like, August is always so dead anyway. Yeah. It is dead right now.
The enthusiasm I've seen for Review Starlight has been consistent. If you were into it, so it's small. It's a small viewership, but it seems like they're kind of consistently like, yeah, I like this. I haven't seen a whole lot of... my feelings on it are, if I wanted Ikuhara, I would watch an Ikuhara thing. If I want Love Live, I would watch a Love Live thing, but I don't, they don't blend well to me.
Oh yeah, you get into a bunch of Twitter fights about this.
I wasn't a fight. No, it wasn't a fight. It was just, somebody got mad at me for calling it an idol show.
It is, though, right?
Review Starlight is an idol show, guys. These are idols.
They
have a gimmick.
You're diminishing it by calling it that? Is that the problem?
I don't know. It's not an insult. It's not
idol
an insult.
Shows
idol shows are the
shows.
Most successful genre. They're going to make a lot of them. And
maybe they thought you were being dismissive. Maybe that Jacob Chapman.
He doesn't like
idol shows.
So when
he calls it that, it's an insult.
Right.
Do you think that's what they were thinking?
I don't know and do not care. I clarified my position.
All right.
And but I do want to say, so I like crackers, like really salty, like pretzel thins or whatever, right? And I like cookies. I like you know, macadamia nut chocolate chip cookies.
Where is this going?
I'm taking this somewhere. I'm really specific. And I like Love Live. I don't like a lot of idol shows, but I do like Love Live, like the original Love Live, not Love Live Sunshine. Stuff that is just sort of this pure healing, like beautifully produced, optimistic, you can do it sort of thing that invites in, like, you know, women and men and young girls and young boys and all that Disney feeling, right? I think that the original Love Live captured the feeling of being at Disneyland better than almost any other anime, right? And I like Ikuhara, which is this challenging takedown of societal systems as sort of like maverick, fuck the police, very, very wild, crazy, arty, avant-garde, weird thing. I don't like them together. So Review Starlight doesn't really work for me. I don't like hate it or anything. It's just like, eh, I don't really care about it because I think that it's the goals are opposite of one another, right? So like there's this just shh, don't think about it. This is just supposed to be reassuring, hyper commercial, feel good, you know, glossy thing, right? Glossy commercial product. And then there's punk rock, queer, avant-garde, weird experimental theater thing. They aren't putting them together doesn't do anything for it. Just means nothing to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So Review Starlight does not work for me personally. But you know, if for people that are enjoying it, I hear it's doing well in Japan, so that's good for them. I think it's doing better than Uma Musume, which not that they're produced by different groups, I think. Psy Games is Uma Musume, and I don't remember Review Starlight's producer, but they were both produced with the idea of, like, okay, idols are all the rage, but we kind of need a gimmick, and you need, like, a gimmick that results in different types of concerts and different types of events, which is why Review Starlight is the way it is, that they're going to put on, like, a play for you and not just a concert, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really neat, and that's cool. But, like, and I think Uma Musume did fine. The music hasn't done as well, which is not great. But it seems like Review Starlight is succeeding where Uma Musume did maybe underperformed a little bit. Not like a failure, but I think I'm not sure it did what they wanted it to. So all that to say that, like, this is all idol stuff. Like, this is it is idol industry stuff, and that's okay. I'm not trying to diss anybody by saying, oh, Review Starlight, that's an idol show. It's an idol show. That's fine.
Yeah. It definitely seemed that way to me. Mm-hmm. It seems super obvious. Like, it's like, what if you put Love Live! Anytime in a blender?
Yep.
Here's what you get.
You get this.
Yeah. Before we wrap, I have been watching. I finally cracked open Star Blazers 2199, which I've been meaning to watch for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. What came out on Blu-ray, right?
Yeah, well, that show has had, like, this tortured process of finally coming out in the U.S. Funimation released the first 12 episodes on Blu-ray in, like, a box set, and I finally got around to watching it, and it is, everyone's been gushing about it for a long time, and it's super entertaining, very well animated. It's like Zebek.
I mostly associate them with Outlaw Star. That was Sunrise didn't want to animate Outlaw Star, so Zebek was
Nadesco, like, for me, because mm-hmm. their logo is right at the beginning of that intro,
right?
Or was it at the very end when it's... I think it's the very end of that intro.
Right. Well, Zebek is, like, not Sunrise. That's sort of how my brain...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. NAIC, also, mm-hmm. In the opening credits. And the show looks great. They obviously spent a long... The show was originally released in theaters three, four episodes at a time, and then released on DVDs, and then aired on television. And some company called Voyager Entertainment licensed it for release in the U.S., and they did all kinds of shenanigans, and then finally Funimation just got it, and... Now they've put it out, and if you know, I've only seen like a little bit of the original Star Blazers. I've seen the live action Yamato movie, and I'm very familiar with the basic plot. Also, if you've seen Battlestar Galactica, it's not that different from Battlestar Galactica. This is like super glossy, incredibly well thought out. Like, okay, we're putting all of our effort into this version of Yamato. Mm-hmm. You can tell. It's very entertaining. I've only seen the first four, and the beginning of Yamato is very entertaining. Like, it's kind of hard to fuck that up.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to see how it goes, but I'm going to keep watching it. It goes by really quick. Like, it's really good sci-fi serial storytelling, and mm-hmm. some of the best in the world. One of the most compelling narratives to have ever come out of sci-fi manga, I think, and that's borne out by its incredible and overwhelming, like, long-term popularity.
Uh-huh.
It's it's a classic, and it I think people are kind of like intimidated by it a little bit because it seems like this big thing that you need to know a lot. There's all these movies and it's kind of confusing, and most of it's not available in the US. You can just buy this and watch it, and you're going to enjoy the hell out of it.
Uh-huh.
In the same way that you would have enjoyed Battlestar Galactica or any other, you know, fantasy or science fiction serial. It is not a big scary franchise full of technobabble that you need to know all kinds of crap for. Mm-hmm. You can just enjoy it as, like, you know, rip-roaring sci-fi stuff. Like, it's really good. So if you're intimidated at all by the sort of ancient lore of Yamato and the you know, all that, ignore all of it. Just watch 2199. You will enjoy it.
Cool. So that's all completely foreign to me. I don't.
You would probably really enjoy it. It's cool. Really good adventure show.
All right. Cool. Well, can you start with this thing?
Yes, absolutely. You could start right here. It explains everything. The story is like I feel like when I was just describing what Yamato feels like that must be kind of how it feels to you a little bit, like this big old thing that you, it's like, I don't have the technical manuals, so I can't watch that show, you
know?
Like,
well, you know, it's old, and it's like, do I want to watch, like, 1970s animation?
You don't. I do, but...
I might. You never know.
You can just watch this, and I honestly think you would appreciate it, because it is A-plus sci-fi serial storytelling. Like,
cool. So this is a retelling of the 1970s slash manga.
Which is, it's a retelling of the original manga. It's mostly a remake of the original show with some story changes. But you don't need to care about any of that. Like, you can follow this beginning to end. I've only seen 4 episodes, so I don't know. Beginning to end.
Probably,
but
you know.
Based on what I've seen so far, you do not need to be familiar with... This is designed to bring in new people and to help. And frankly, when I saw... when I saw some original Star Blazers in the live-action movie and everything, there's nothing confusing. It's just a really good science fiction narrative. It's just a really fun, good, well-thought-out science fiction narrative. So, I really do think you would like it. And I would stick to 2199 unless you really want to dig into the old... Unless you want to roll around in the crust like me. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to read those Matsumoto comics. Seven Seas is putting them out for the first time in a hardbound edition. I think it's just one volume. I'm excited to read that. I want to see those bell-bottom pants and the early Matsumoto stuff. It's cool.
Cool.
All right. Yo, that wraps us up. Next time we do a show, which will be next week, we will take questions. Mm-hmm. So keep an eye out for that. I'm really happy to be back.
Me too.
Yeah. All right. See y'all next week.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that's our show. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, on Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, all that stuff. Leave us comments. It really helps us out. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll see you on the next week.